many other expenses. It also produced countless metric tons of completely unnecessary greenhouse gas emissions.
Indeed. Well, that sometimes we just have to look at the nuts and bolts of these things, the reality, because that's what's coming at us, is the reality of vast tonnage of greenhouse gases accumulating in our atmosphere that are just throwing things totally haywire. So thank you so much, Jim and Janet. Really appreciate you being on with me today.
Thanks for your work, Paul.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, we got to go out. Maybe we'll have another snippet of Buffy St. Marie. Thanks, Ty, for being on the board. Thanks for everybody who called. Bye, everybody.
Slick, you investors in hate, you Saddams and you Bushes, you Bin Ladens and snakes, you billionaire bullies, you're a globalized curse. You put war on the masses and then you clean out the purse. And that's how it's done. War after war, you old feudal parasites, you just sacrifice the poor. You got the cutting edge weapons, but your scam's still the same as it's been since the Romans. Yo, it's the Patriot game. Yo, that's the war racket. It's the war racket. It's the war racket. It's the war racket. You twisters of language, you creeps of disguise, yeah, disinformation. It's like worms in your eyes. You privileged bankers. You gambler thieves.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m. Next up is Fight the Empire.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring, host of Fight the Empire. And let's get on with the show. If anybody wants to call in with a question or a comment, the number is 503-231-8187. Well, the latest news is that Nancy Pelosi has poked the dragon, and the dragon is firing back. like we might, you know, she went to visit Taiwan and looking across the Taiwan Strait at the Chinese mainland, expressing solidarity with the Taiwanese people and so forth and so on. And we might ask just what did Nancy Pelosi accomplish by this? Even Henry Kissinger was alarmed. He expressed fear that this was could lead to lead to greater problems. And so the latest is that now it looks that U.S. warships are heading towards the Taiwan Strait, and I guess the U.S. This is sort of a tricky thing. I'm trying to understand this myself. Is that the U.S. claims that the Taiwan Strait are international waters because the U.S. claims that Taiwan and is a separate nation from China itself, and so in that case, the water, the ocean separating them is international waters. But if China claims that Taiwan is actually a province of China, so it's the water is not between two separate nations; it's between the mainland and an offshore island. So that is a, you know, you might think it's kind of a odd little dispute, but it could lead to war the way things are going. And so U.S. warships, I guess, are prepared to enter the Taiwan Strait. And what comes next? Well, who knows? I guess we're in a position where we're waiting to find out. In the meantime, Putin has, or President Biden is calling for the overthrow of Russian President Vladimir Putin. And this is not the first time, but, you may say that, Putin's a, Putin is not a nice guy. He's got a pretty, a nasty record, but even so, it is not our business to overthrow the leader of another country. It's whether they deserve it or not. If the other countries have to deal with their own leaders, and the U.S. And not a good record of going around the world overthrowing this leader and putting into office some other leader who may be just as bad, if not worse. And you might ask, don't we have enough problems at home? We have a huge military budget for one thing, bigger than I think the next 12 countries combined, and so we're spending all this money on making this big splash around the world, where we have problems at home that need fixing, and the way to fix them is to spend some money and pay some people to do the fixing. So, what do you think about that? Do you think President Biden is doing the right thing in the world? Just give us a call at 503-231-8187. Just thinking about former President Donald Trump, with his kind of obnoxious personality and everything else about him, it may be that the worst thing about President Trump and Donald Trump is that he makes a warmonger like Joe Biden look good by comparison, which is not a good thing. People are so relieved that Trump is gone that now Joe Biden is in office, and he is kind of stirring the international scene and to no good effect. And so this is a to me, this is a very damaging legacy. This is a long-term U.S. legacy of trying to run the world. You know, the U.S. claims to be number one in world power, but it doesn't seem to do us much good at home. In fact, it's costing money that we could be spending on our problems at home. So this is a, like I said, this to me, the worst thing about Donald Trump is that he makes people kind of are relieved that he's gone, and they're willing to put up with kind of the antics of Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi, you know, as kind of stirring up the international scene. So there is a question of this is an article in the anti-war website by Ray McGovern, and he says the U.S. has thrown down the gauntlet. A showdown may come in the coming weeks if sanity does not prevail. White House and Pentagon spokesmen keep insisting what's important for us right now is to make sure that Beijing understands that our forces in the region will continue to operate, to fly, to sail wherever international waters allow. That includes the Taiwan Strait. I think you should expect that we will continue to do Taiwan Strait transits as we have in the past in the coming weeks. And like I said, this whether the Taiwan Strait is an international waterway depends on how you define the relation between the mainland China and the island of Taiwan. If China insists that this is not an international waterway, it's just a waterway that separates two parts of the same country. And so, to me, this is very disturbing because it's kind of the whatever reason Pelosi has for going to Taiwan, probably domestic, it kind of brightens her credentials at home, but is not doing anything good on the international scene. We'd like to go talk some more about what's going on in Ukraine. What happened was back in late, I think 2014, an elected president of Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych, was overthrown. Now, he was elected. He was friendly with the Soviet Union and Russia, and he was overthrown by what they call the so-called Maidan Revolution. These were street people, organized street gangs that overthrew the government. And I think at one time they even set fire to a building where some government supporters were trapped inside, and I think 40 some people died in the fire. And so the so-called Maidan Revolution overthrew an elected president, Viktor Yanukovych. Some of these people in the Maidan Revolution were what you might call neo-Nazis, and they belonged to what's called the Azov Battalion, which I believe the Azov Battalion had been a kind of a militia group, but now it's been incorporated into the Army of Ukraine, which is sort of a very disturbing thing going on there. And you know, I've said this before, and I keep bringing this up because all the usual accounts, the news accounts of Russia and Ukraine, they start with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. That's where they begin the story, and I think this gives us a false picture. It's like coming into the middle of a movie and thinking you know what's going on. It's you can't really understand it without understanding what happened before. And you can say that the Russian invasion was not justified, but it was certainly provoked. And so, but the news we get kind of in the mainstream media did not take this into account. And it's a Ukraine. If you look at a map of Ukraine, it's a it's kind of the problems are pretty clear. What's going on is that there are two. You kind of have to wonder why Ukraine is a single nation. Of course, its borders did not always coincide with the ones they have now. Borders have changed over the years. But Ukraine is like I think of it as like a fried egg with two yolks. And so you have half of Ukraine is Ukrainian people who speak their language, and then you have the other half are Russian people who speak their language, and they are sort of roughly equal in size. And a situation like that, the two sides really, you know, better get along or learn to live with each other. But apparently they are not. And the big question whether the U.S. is instigating turmoil in Ukraine, taking sides against the Russian-speaking people as a way of getting at Putin. And so, in fact...
Marcos is on the line.
We have a caller on the line. Marcos. Morning, you're on the air.
Good morning, Per.
Yes.
The point that you just made about the egg with the two yolks is perhaps the most important piece that's not shared with the American public with our news coverage. Ukraine is typically just characterized as a single entity. It's Ukraine, and the extent that there is a problem within Ukraine, that's attributed to so-called Russian separatists, which is, to me, a very ingenuous way of describing the people that were very much under attack since 2014. These are people who are Russian-speaking, and one of the key parts of the new government that the United States brought to fruition through our coup d'etat in 2014 was that the new government was explicitly anti-Russian, that they actually banned the use of the Russian language, which is the language that was spoken by something like 40% of the Ukrainian population. And all of a sudden now the Russian speakers are the losers in a country where previously they could coexist fairly equally with the Ukrainian speaking people. As we know, 14,000 Russian-speaking people have been killed since 2014 with Ukraine's continuous attack on those Russian-speaking people who, in a defensive move, they decided to form their own republics in the Donbass, the Luhansk and Donetsk, basically for self-protection. And they've been under attack for the last 8 years. That's the piece that's largely unknown to the American public, that this war has been going on, and specifically a war against Russian-speaking people, which may, to a certain extent, explain Putin's concern about coming to their aid, to actually defend Russian-speaking people from being massacred by the Ukrainian army. And just before I finish this rant, it was said that shelling of the Donbass by the Ukrainian army had intensified enormously 9 days prior to Putin's invasion. and that there was a large army massing. We heard about the Russians massing on the Ukrainian border. Well, equally, Ukrainian army was massing against the Donbass with something like 60 to 100,000 troops poised to attack the Donbass imminently. So that would give some kind of a context to why Putin felt some urgency in doing what he did.
Well, he's sort of required to defend Russian people anywhere in the world. I mean, this is sort of one of the national leaders are called upon to do. And if an American gets in trouble somewhere in the world, we are our government expected to come to that person's aid. So this is just sort of normal behavior. But where do you think this will lead to? You have any opinions on that?
Well, everyone that follows this, that I've been following, that my best informants have been retired American military personnel like Colonel Douglas McGregor, former Marine Intelligence Officer Scott Ritter. They've been saying from the very beginning that it's an unwinnable war from the Ukrainian side, that the United States is very cynically promoting the war, knowing that it's unwinnable. That very much parallels what we were doing in Afghanistan for 20 years. It's now come out that officials for 20 years knew that the Afghan project was unwinnable, and yet they kept it going because it was a giant grift. Trillions of dollars changed hands. And similarly, Ukraine, being the most corrupt country in Europe, that was declared long before this, it is a giant grift. It's a way of churning money, billions of dollars, and there's no the cynicism is that it's known by everybody that Ukraine cannot win, so they want to drag it out as long as possible. Apparently, the United States does, and where it ends, most people predict is simply a wrecked Ukraine that will just be a failed state, possibly something that the Russians have to make sense of. The Russian ambitions in this have expanded beyond what they originally were. The original intention seemed to be was to defend the Donbass and to, in some way, put a marker down that NATO was not going to expand right to Russia's border. Mm-hmm. So where it ends, people have said a long time ago that it will end in a conversation, it will end in negotiations, but the United States has been blocking negotiations for close to 6 months now. The United States is absolutely opposed to negotiations, and it seems as if the United States wanted the war more than any other outcome, that they actually wanted Russia to do what it did.
Well, you know, one thing that kind of occurs to me, I think, you know, as odious as Donald Trump was, it seems to me that when you look at actions and what they do on the world stage, I think the Democrats, you could argue the Democrats are, more warlike than even a person like Donald Trump. I think this is very disturbing. I mean, the Democrats, they sort of they're able to put some kind of a veneer on warlike actions and make it seem like a good thing to do, but it's not a good thing to do, and it's leading us into a lot of trouble. I don't know. What is your opinion on that?
It's painful to have to contrast Trump to the Democratic leadership, but by default, you could at least say that Trump didn't provoke a major confrontation with China or Russia, that he didn't bring the world closer to nuclear apocalypse. Maybe he would have been planning to, maybe, who knows? I mean, was it really his intention to avoid Armageddon? I don't know. But this has been a long time coming. This is, we have to, again, if you simply wanted to explain Ukraine to somebody that wasn't familiar, you could do no better than to focus on 2014, the events leading up to the coup. We've talked about before how Victoria Nuland, who is one of the neocons that's currently with the State Department, was working in the State Department as an undersecretary within the State Department in the Obama administration.
Well, let me interject. It seems interesting to me that Victoria Nuland seems to be at home, no matter who is president. She's got her place in the State Department.
There you go.
It's kind of disturbing.
I mean, she obviously played a huge role. You might even call her the manager of the coup d'etat that happened in 2014. We heard her on an intercepted telephone call, actually calling for who the next president would be post coup, 2 weeks prior to the coup. So what a smoking pistol that is. My question to you, Per, would be this. Everyone has said that Putin's invading Ukraine is a war crime. And by the definition of what a war crime is, crossing a border to another country, unless you have an ironclad defense argument that is to preempt an imminent attack. I'm not sure if Putin can actually make that claim, even though the imminent attack was directed at Russian-speaking Ukrainians. What's the difference between crossing a border and invading another country and simply going into that other country and changing the government, but with a more fine-tuning, a subtler method such as a coup d'etat, where you're not actually invading the country, you're just pumping $5 billion into the country, which Victoria Nuland has said we did prior to the coup, arming Nazi elements, putting Nazi elements in a decisive position where they could actually provide the muscle for the coup. What's the difference between a coup and an invasion? And because if the outcome is the same, regime change, ultimately, it just seems as if, like, a coup is just a subtler method of achieving the same result.
Well, it's kind of like hiring somebody to do your dirty work, what it is.
Here's another piece of it that most people don't know about, and that is the role of Igor Kolomoisky. Most Americans wouldn't know that name, but he's a major player in Ukraine, has been for years. He's an oligarch, seen as a very thuggish character. He's seen as somebody who is able to apparently swindle billions of dollars in international funding and put it in his pocket. He is Zelensky's biggest backer. He actually funded Zelensky's political campaign. He hosted the TV show that Zelensky became popular on, playing the president. And interestingly enough, Kolomoisky, who is Jewish, as is Zelensky, is also the biggest backer of the Azov Battalion, which you mentioned earlier. He's provided the Azovs with money and weapons, oftentimes Israeli weapons, state-of-the-art weapons. He took the Azovs from a bunch of street hooligans, soccer hooligans, essentially, and made them part, as you mentioned earlier, of the Ukrainian military. It's a Nazi organization, and it's not the only Nazi organization. There are many, the Right Sector, there's a list of explicitly Nazi units within the Israeli military. Kolomoisky is a James Bond villain. He is said to have a giant aquarium in his office and intimidates visitors by feeding a shark that he keeps in the aquarium.
Really?
The fact that this guy is not talked about in America, I mean, he's a larger-than-life villain who's a major player, and yet somehow his name is completely kept out of the narrative for 6 months.
Now, is he connected? Are any of our politicians, do they have dealings with Kolomoisky? I seem to recall something about that, but I don't have the details at hand.
I think he's kind of kryptonite for American politicians to have direct mm-hmm. associations with.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to talk about American politicians involved with Ukraine, you could do no better than to look at who showed up in Ukraine in 2014. John McCain, Amy Klobuchar, Lindsey Graham, some of the biggest players in American politics were there mm-hmm. urging on regime change in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, it's an awkward metaphor, but a lot of folks like to look at November 6th as a near coup d'etat in America. What if it actually was something where Vladimir Putin had put $5 billion behind the backers of the November 6th Capitol insurrection? What if they had 5 billion Russian rubles in their pocket? What if they were armed by Vladimir Putin? What if their coup actually was an armed takeover?
Well, that's a very good question, I think, but I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. It's our time is up, but those are very good questions for people to ponder. What if Putin had funded the Capitol insurrectionists here? We'd be this would be an international crime. So I want to thank you. That's a very good point for people to think about as we bring this show to an end, and we might wonder what comes next. We start poking the bear and poking the dragon. This does not just end quietly. It could lead to all kinds of dire problems. So I want to thank our listeners. I want to thank our callers. This has been Fight the Empire, and stay tuned to KBOO.